The Supreme Court handed down several decisions today. Joining us to talk about them is Emily Bazelon, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine and a fellow at Yale Law School. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
And let's start with the one that seems like it's getting the most attention. This is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, versus Abercrombie and Fitch. Remind us of the basics of this case.
Yeah, sure. A woman named Samantha Eloff, who is Muslim and wears a headscarf, applied for a job at Abercrombie & Fitch. And the store has a general policy saying that people who work there cannot wear caps. And so the person who interviewed Samantha Eloff for this job thought she was qualified but was worried that her headscarf would violate the rule against caps. So she asked a supervisor, and the supervisor said, yeah, you're right, we can't hire her because of that. And Samantha Eloff and eventually the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission brought an action against Abercrombie and Fitch, saying that this is a violation against Eloff's protection against religious discrimination in the workplace.
And what did the court say?
The court agreed with the EEOC and with Samantha Eloff, and this essentially is a case that's mostly pretty clear. It was an 8-1 decision, and the law at issue here is Title VII, and what Congress said in Title VII is that you can't discriminate, you can't decide not to hire a job applicant because of his or her religious practice. And so really the only thing at issue here was whether Abercrombie and Fitch knew that Eloff was wearing a headscarf for religious purposes. And for a majority, Justice Scalia essentially said, you know what, they didn't have to Eloff didn't have to prove that she told them she had a headscarf. It was kind of clear enough. And, you know, besides the fact this employer just can't discriminate on the basis of this pretty clear religious observance.
And how wide of an impact does a decision like this have? Does this go beyond Abercrombie and Fitch?
It does. It means that employers generally, when they're making hiring decisions and they're looking at someone or they know something about someone's religious practice, they can't just not ask the question. So, for example, if you had a Jewish job applicant and you knew that person was super religious and wouldn't work on a Saturday, you can't just say, like, okay, we're not going to hire them without, and the fact that they haven't brought up this observance is going to protect us legally.
That the burden is on the employer to find that out.
Exactly. And so And part of the Supreme Court's opinion here is based on the idea that what Congress intended was not what Scalia called mere neutrality with regard to religious practices, but actually favored treatment for people's protection of religion in the workplace.
OK, well, another big case that the court decided today is Ilonis versus the United States. Tell us about that one.
This is a case in which Anthony Ilonis, is a guy in Pennsylvania who got very angry with his wife and his coworkers and started posting a lot of threats against them on Facebook. Some of the threats were couched in this kind of language of rap. He said afterward that he was imitating various rappers and parodists online and that he hadn't intended the threats. But the jury convicted him based on an instruction saying that they were supposed to look at whether the person receiving the threats, mostly his wife, whether she had a reasonable fear that he was trying to hurt her. And so the question in this case was, is that the right test for deciding whether to prosecute someone on a federal based on a federal law that bans threats across the internet?
And what did the justices say?
The justices said that the court used the wrong standard. They sided with Anthony Ilonis about this. And they said essentially that there's always, or practically always, a kind of intent requirement in a criminal statute, that you have to look at the state of mind of the person who is accused of the criminal act. And so in this case, what the jury should have considered was whether Ilonis intended these messages as threats or whether the jury believed him that he was just kind of playing around online. He talked about these Facebook's posts as being therapeutic.
So what are the implications of this decision?
This is also a pretty major decision for a couple of reasons. One is that there have not been very many federal prosecutions under this law that bans threats. Even though when you think about all the threats that go flying around the internet every day, that would seem surprising. And so one of the issues here, which domestic violence advocates are worried about, is whether this will make it even less likely for cases to be prosecuted with very real threats, because police and prosecutors will think, well, it's going to be hard to prove the state of mind of the person making the threats. And this comes up not just in the context of this law and just simply threats, but also there's been a push to pass state laws about stalking. And they tend to also use the standard of the person who's being stalked, how did he or she feel, as opposed to the intent of the person doing the actions.
All right, Emily Bazelon, staff writer at the New York Times Magazine and a fellow at Yale Law School, talking with us about some of the Supreme Court decisions that were handed down today. Emily, when's the next day of decisions coming from the court? Do we know?
Next week, I believe, and we're looking for a few big ones coming up, including same-sex marriage and Obamacare.
Although I'm guessing those will not happen next week. We'll probably have to wait a little bit longer for those. Emily, thanks so much as always.
Thanks for having me.